Hey friends, every founder I know has been wondering at some point or another how much other brands are making, what tech they're using, how big their teams are. Everyone kind of wants to see what other brands are doing and how they are successful. And even though we know that every business journey looks different, it's natural to still be curious, right? And the product world is shifting so fast. Right now, we're seeing rising costs, we're seeing tariffs, supply chain delays, and also changes to consumer buying habits. And so that's going to ultimately change how we are creating, marketing, and selling our products. And we know that there's a lot of folks pivoting, a lot of people making changes to how things are going. And that is why I wanted to take another temperature check of our industry. And we recently collected 400 responses to our State of the Product Industry survey. We had 400 brands that stretched a wide range of product categories, experience levels, and income levels, and they shared their insights and their business details so that we could create this collective report. Now, you can access this report at proof2product.com/2025survey. I'm going to take this time on the podcast to walk you through the different sections and explain some of the findings that I had. And then this might end up being multiple episodes. We're just going to have to see how it goes. But I do want to take a moment to thank everyone that contributed. Without your details, without you sharing so openly, we wouldn't be able to track these types of trends or challenges or even opportunities that we can then supply back to the industry. So your giving to us allowed us to give back to you, and I appreciate that. So thank you so much. Also, I will be doing some further case studies and deep dives into the different revenue levels that were reported in this. This report is pretty long as it is, and I didn't want to bombard it with more. So I'm going to do that within our labs community. So if you're one of our labs members, keep an eye out. I'm going to be sharing those case studies soon, and you can ask questions, and I'd be happy to answer them too. If you're not part of our labs community, this is a good time to join. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Okay, so let's talk about who participated in this survey. This is the second time we've conducted the State of the Product Industry survey. 2024 was the first year that we did this. Last year, we had significantly more responses. We had 400 product-based business owners that replied to our 2025 survey. And again, they come from a diverse set of backgrounds, business models, revenue streams, and experience levels. I did wonder, why did we have such a drop in numbers? There are a few things that I can kind of contribute this to. First, we gave a shorter window of time for people to complete the survey. I only had 2 weeks to allow this time given my personal schedule. So last year, I think we went 3 or 3.5 weeks. So people had more time to share the report with others, to fill it out themselves. And this time around, they just had less time to do so. I also think that we ended up releasing this survey at kind of a precarious time where people were distracted. So what I mean by this, we released this at the very beginning of April, I believe it was, or maybe March 31st, and it was only open for 2 weeks. And at that time, that was when a lot of the tariff news was being released, and there was a lot of other things happening in the news that were capturing the attention of people in our industry. You know, when the tariff stuff was happening, it was like a lot of chaos and a lot of whiplash. One day it was a certain percentage, the next day it was another. And so maybe people just were preoccupied and weren't able to complete the survey. We did have a number of partners that shared the survey out with their communities, and we thank you for that. So thank you. But regardless, the fact that we had 400 incredible businesses that submitted their information is really enriching, and it's a good data set. So I'm going to go through and share what we know about them. So majority of them live in the United States. 89% were in the US, 6% were in Canada, 4% in Europe, and 1% reported living in Australia. We asked if they worked full-time in their business, and almost 69% work full-time in their business. Last year, we asked this question a little bit differently based on work hours, and this year, we explicitly said, are you working full-time in your business? The other 31% are not working full-time in their business, but I thought it was interesting that almost 7 out of 10 participants reported that they spend full-time hours and that their business is kind of the primary thing they're working on. How long have you been in business? This year's respondents skewed a little bit more seasoned than last year's respondents. We had a big chunk of newer businesses report last year, whereas this year, 89% were in business for more than 3 years. So that's pretty substantial. 54% were in business for more than 6 years, and that was up from 50% last year. And then 11% were 2 years or less. And so that was down from 18% last year. The largest chunk of business owners that participated in the survey this year were in the 3 to 10 year range. So just to recap our participant summary, the largest chunk of them were from the United States. Almost 70% were full-time founders with a typical workload of 30 to 60 hours. I'll talk more about the hours in a little while. 89% of them have been running their business for more than 3 years, which means we have a stronger pool of experienced business owners that we're talking about. And 47% of them are running their businesses alone without any support from employees or contractors. That statistic is down from 61.5% of businesses who were running things alone last year. So it's a pretty big drop. People are still working long hours. We'll talk about that too. But keep these statistics in mind as we're talking through the report details. Okay, we asked respondents how many SKUs you have, and the responses varied. The largest number of participants had 200 to 400 SKUs, and this is up from last year where I think it was 100 to 200 was kind of more the midpoint. This is a lot of SKUs. This is a lot. Larger product brands with 400 plus SKUs were most commonly in business for at least 6 years, or they were also at the $500,000 gross income level. Newer businesses in that 1 to 2 year range, they averaged fewer SKUs, more closely aligned with around 100 SKUs, which tracks, right? A newer business is going to have fewer SKUs. A more seasoned business is going to have a larger collection. That's pretty common in our space. And we asked folks, how do you manufacture your products? The real mix, 32% use in-house and domestic outsourcing. Again, most of these responses were from people in the United States. So we can assume that when I say domestic, it's probably the US, but for purposes of keeping it clean, we just said domestic for anyone that's manufacturing in their own country. 21% of everyone that was surveyed manufactures in-house only. 16.5% domestic and international partners, but they don't do anything in-house. 15.5% produce in-house and then do international outsourcing. 12.5% does only domestic outsourcing, and 3% only does international outsourcing. So again, it was a lot of different takes. Hybrid manufacturing models of both in-house and then external production seemed to be the most popular. Fully outsourcing production, even if it was only done internationally, it seems to be pretty rare. Like I said, only 3% is manufacturing 100% internationally, and then that 12% is domestic. But it looks like there's a wide range of manufacturing types, and a lot's being done here in the United States as best we can. Okay, I do have some stats in the report about manufacturing trends by years of business and also revenue levels. So check the report for that. Again, it's at proof2product.com/2025survey. We did ask questions about whether or not businesses had been impacted by President Trump's tariffs. And the answers were pretty evenly split on this one. 49% said yes, and 51% said that they had no impact from the tariffs. However, I want to mention here again that we solicited this survey at the beginning of April when the tariff situation was changing very rapidly and almost daily. So there were a lot of unknowns when folks were filling out this survey. And I would like to come back to this question and revisit it in about 6 months to see what the ripple effects of these tariffs might be. So for example, the people that are manufacturing overseas, they knew right away that they were going to be impacted by the tariffs. They may not have known how they were going to be impacted, but they knew that they were going to have to make adjustments to either their pricing or their manufacturing to avoid paying these additional fees. For folks that are manufacturing domestically, they will still likely be affected by the tariffs. But it will be more of a ripple effect situation where the cost of goods and supplies and materials go up, the cost of labor here goes up, because those materials and things are essentially being sourced in China or elsewhere and coming to the United States to be put together. So again, those manufacturing domestically may not see immediate effects or impacts from the tariffs, but they are very likely to see rising supply costs and just general overhead. But this is a developing situation, and I want people to pay close attention to their production costs so that they can keep an eye on things. And if they need to increase their pricing or discontinue product for a little bit, they can make informed decisions as things unfold. So definitely keep an eye on those things. We had an open-ended question where we asked folks, how have you been impacted by President Trump's tariffs? So I want to read some of these because I think they're impactful. My materials are sourced from China. My U.S. suppliers also buy from China. Prices have gone up and I have had to increase my prices to match. That was from a business that's under $100,000 in revenue and in 3 to 5 years in business. Another business says, I'm a small designer and finding trustworthy overseas manufacturers is really hard. I'm looking for alternatives with low MOQ because the service is inconsistent. This again was under 100K revenue, 3 to 5 years in business. Our luxury packaging materials are now out of budget due to excessive tariffs. They are not high quality alternatives made in the United States. This is a mid $100,000 range business, 6 to 10 years in business. One of our best-selling product lines is manufactured overseas. Without U.S. alternatives at the right quality and cost, we may have to discontinue it. That was from a mid-$100,000 revenue, 6 to 10-year-old business. All right. So let's talk team support. We asked generally everyone how many people are on your team, and you can see the report for details on how many employees and how many contractors. The noteworthy thing here is that 47% of participants are running their businesses solo, no support from contractors or employees. Now, the good news is this is approximately 15% lower than last year's survey, meaning that more people are seeking support from team members, which I love to see. When I conducted this survey last year, I received a lot of questions about the types of roles and responsibilities that people were hiring for on their teams. So we added that to this year's survey, and I asked folks that had employees or contractors, just that segment, what did you hire for first? Production and fulfillment are the top two positions, coming in at a collective 46% of all responses. And then we went into sales, which was a combination of in-house and outside sales teams and general assistant support. The next batch of tasks that we're hired for tended to be money things. So CPA, taxes, bookkeeping, which tracks. This is what I tend to see in my community, and I'm not surprised by those details. When we asked about future plans for hiring, it was kind of a mixed bag. 18% plan to hire support in the next year, 48% do not plan to hire support, and 34% are unsure. We had an open-ended question box here where people could leave comments and things, and it was really interesting. So one of the businesses is 1 to 2 years in business, and they said, I'm still doing it all myself. I would love to hire help, but I can't afford it yet. Someone else said, hiring help is on my dream list, but right now I need to save every penny and keep it in the business. Someone else said, hiring is hard. I know what I need, but finding good people and training them has been way harder than I thought. Also, somebody said, I can't keep doing everything. I need managers, not just helpers. And a success story here, hiring managers can run things without me. That was the best and hardest thing I've ever done. That's a business making over $500,000 in revenue, and they're in business 10 to 14 years. Okay, when we asked how many hours people are working on average, 31% of respondents say that they're working more than 41 hours per week, which is the same as last year's survey. 29% are working in the range of 31 to 40 hours per week, which is up from 25% last year. And then 6% are working under 10 hours, which is down from 9%. So people are still working quite a bit. 60% are working more than 30 hours per week. But again, several are reporting more than 60 plus hours per week. So I want to remind you all, friends, please take care of yourself. Working 40 to 60 hours per week consistently, it's not sustainable and you will burn yourself out, especially when you've got all these other things going on. I also want to note here that as the years of business experience grew and the annual revenue rose, the number of hours worked by the business owner tended to drop below 40 hours per week, specifically for those that were reporting having employees and contractors. So theoretically, they would be distributing work to others and they'd get their work hours down, which is great. Okay, let's talk about finances. We asked people, how do you make your money? And we asked them to check off all the different sales channels that they're utilizing in their business. Not surprisingly, 99% of them are selling direct to consumer in some fashion. 87% of them are selling wholesale. And this number is up from 79% last year, which is really kind of exciting to see given that I teach people how to sell wholesale. 25% of respondents are utilizing six or more revenue streams. That's a lot. But this is also down significantly from last year, where there were 87% of respondents who said they were selling to six or more revenue streams. I should note here, the businesses that are under 2 years old noted that retail in-person markets were their top driving revenue stream. And businesses that were more than 3 years old talked about online wholesale being the driver of most of their revenue. And that continued to grow larger as the years of experience and revenue increased. So it was very interesting to see that D2C was really the primary spot for the younger businesses. Wholesale was the primary sales channel for the more seasoned folks. Okay, so that was the revenue streams. Let's look at annual gross revenue. So this is the total revenue that was brought into the businesses. 40% report annual gross revenues of less than $50,000 per year. This is down from last year when the number was 48%. But again, remember the audience here. This audience skews a little more experienced than last year's survey respondents. 42.5% bring in over $100,000 a year in annual revenue, which is up from 36% last year. Kind of noteworthy here, our Paper Kimp alumni had higher representations in the higher income categories. So $100,000 to $500,000 revenue bracket was where a lot of our Paper Kimp alumni fell. And they reported profit margins in the 51 to 60% range compared to non-alumni who were in the 30 to 50% profit margin range. Coincidentally, our alumni were also less represented in the under $50,000 revenue bucket. So that was really nice to see that our folks are doing well and thriving. I did ask folks, how do your overall sales compare Q1 2025 versus Q1 2024? I know Q1 of this year has felt like a really bumpy ride and people were like, I want to know, like my sales are down or my sales are the same. Is that what other people are seeing too? The numbers were kind of split. 44% are seeing higher numbers, higher sales in Q1 of 2025 compared to 24. 42% are seeing lower numbers, lower sales numbers in Q1 of 2025. And 15% are seeing same sales data from Q1 2025 and Q1 2024. I put a chart in the report that talks about years of experience and it shows the breakdown. Annual net profit. So this is what you're taking home. This is the profit left in the business after all expenses are paid. So you collect your revenue, you pay your expenses, and your net profit's what's left. Over 52% of respondents reported making less than $25,000 net profit. About 23% reported $51,000 to $200,000 in net profit, and only 3.5% reported over $300,000 in net profit. We asked folks this year how much they are paying themselves, and this was something that a lot of people asked us to collect. It turns out that 28% of participants are not paying themselves from the business. 37% are paying themselves under $25,000 a year. 30% are paying themselves somewhere in the range of $25,000 a year to $100,000 a year. And then 5%, only 5% of all survey respondents are taking home more than $100,000 a year from their business. We asked folks too, like, is your business the primary source of income? About 25% said yes, and about 75% said no. Which I included a little chart in the report that overlapped this with if their business was their primary income or not and how much they were paying themselves. We did ask about other sources of income, right? Because if folks aren't pulling a paycheck or if they're taking home a little bit of paycheck, they likely need to be sourcing money elsewhere. So 87.5% of all participants commented that they do have other sources of income contributing to their household. So majority of folks who have other sources of income are not relying on their business for their primary source of income. When I asked what those other sources of income were, about 78% were sharing costs with either a spouse, a partner, or a roommate. 19% stated that they have a part-time job. 15% have a full-time job for another company. And about 3% have another business that contributes to their family income. So they might be running multiple businesses. So that is the overview on finances and the general overview of team and who these folks are. Let's talk about sales and also marketing. So we asked folks again what website platforms they're using for their sales. About 74% are using Shopify, which is up from 66% last year, and 12% are on Squarespace, which is down from 14% last year. Surprisingly, there's about 5% of folks who said they do not have their own website. This increased over the last year. Last year, we only saw 3% of folks who said they did not have a website. I want you to have your own digital home online, and it's super important to do that because online retail and online wholesale are the two revenue streams that are bringing in the most amount of business. And so I want you to be equipped to handle that. And that means having your own site. I will say that folks are using third-party platforms. So some of the 5% may be utilizing third-party platforms like Etsy or Faire, things like that. But it is still important to have your own digital home. And I would encourage anyone in that 5% to even get just a landing page where you can have information about your company and link out to a third-party platform. Okay, third-party platforms, we asked them to select all of the different places that they utilize for their business. 76% of participants sell on Faire. This is up from 69% last year. About 51% sell on Etsy, pretty much the same as last year. There was an uptick in people selling on Instagram and Facebook shops. People are selling on Google Shopping, Amazon, TikTok. And then about 9.5% are not selling on any third-party platform. And this is down from about 13% last year. When I crunched the data, there's a lot of people selling on multiple third-party platforms in addition to their own website. So we also got to be careful not to spread ourselves too thin. I asked specifically those that mentioned they were selling on Faire, I asked them, are your sales up, down, or the same from last year? Again, we look specifically at Q1. 42% reported higher earnings, higher sales in Q1 2025 than 2024. 38% reported lower sales on Faire in Q1 2025 compared to 2024. And 20% said they've had about the same amount of sales from 2025 versus 2024 on Faire. So 42 were higher, 38 were lower, and 20 was about the same. We asked also about Etsy. Anyone that said they sold on Etsy, we asked them, are your sales up, down, or the same? 23 said that they're up in 2025. 54% said they're lower in 2025 compared to 2024. And 23% said that they're about the same last year and now. Again, I want to note here that if you are selling on multiple platforms, I want to encourage you to do an audit. I want you to review the sales data for each platform and identify which ones are delivering the highest quality customers, the highest volume of sales, and then focus your efforts there. If you are selling on multiple platforms and that's working for you, fantastic, keep going. But some of you are spreading yourselves too thin, and knowing that about 47% of you are working alone, I want you to be careful about where you're allocating your time and energy. I want you leaning into the things that are producing the greatest output, the most cash flow, right? So utilizing too many third-party platforms is an area where I see people start to feel overloaded or overextending themselves. So focusing on the sales channels and sales platforms that are driving the most revenue and also bringing in the highest caliber clients is where I want you to focus. Now, let's talk about emails. There's a list of email service providers that most people are using. Klaviyo is the number one. We saw a decrease in the number of MailChimp users. Flowdesk was about the same. We also saw a little bit of an uptick in people using Shopify email. I talk about this a little bit more on the episode with Jessica from E-commerce Badassery, so I won't go into it here and duplicate it so you don't have to listen to it twice. But take a look. She provided some good additional alternatives that you could use that aren't on this list. One thing we did talk at length about and that I want to call out here separately because it's that important is that 13% of respondents to the survey are not utilizing email marketing. That is down slightly from last year. Last year, we had 15% of respondents that were not doing any sort of email marketing. And this is a completely missed opportunity, friends. If you are not doing email marketing, I want you to really think about embedding that into your marketing strategies and tactics moving forward. Email marketing is one of the highest ROI mechanisms that we have to reach our customers. It's how we can build strong relationships with folks. And really, truly, the last stat I saw was that every $1 that you spend on email marketing, you can expect an ROI of at least $42 in return. And I will tell you personally, almost every time I send an email, I'm making money. And I know the same is true for my clients. We've built out really cool email systems that are continuing to sell their products. So again, if you are not doing email marketing right now, I would strongly encourage you to do email marketing. And if you're not sure how to start, come join us inside of my labs program because we talk at length about this. Plus, we have templates and workflows and things like that that you can follow. So it's like plug and play. We make it real, real easy for you to email your customers in a meaningful, thoughtful, adding value sort of way. Okay, so looking more into marketing, we asked folks which marketing strategies and tactics they use for their business. In this one, we did ask participants to select everything that they're doing. So it was a lot of data. The five most selected answers were email marketing was number one, which I was glad to see. Retail in-person markets were number two, wholesale trade shows, direct mail marketing, and paid advertising. Those were the top five. The least utilized marketing tactics were podcasting as a host, affiliates for other brands and affiliates for your brands, and then SMS marketing. We went a little deeper and we asked which ones have driven the most sales to your business. And the top five were email marketing, in-person markets for retail, wholesale trade shows, partnerships and collaborations, and paid advertising. I'm not very surprised that the in-person component is a big piece of this. I think there's a lot of people wanting and craving more in-person interactions. There's an experiential side of things that's really important. I'm not surprised by email marketing being at the top. The report covers some details about social media platforms folks are using and which ones are driving the most amount of customers and traffic and sales to their websites. Interestingly enough, Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest in that order are the ones that are leading the highest volume of sales to the online shopping experience. When it comes to social media marketing and figuring out what's going to work best for your business, this is a good reminder to track your customer data and your website visitor details so that you can understand where people are finding you and how they're making their way to your website. Then we can use that data to decide how you want to allocate your marketing dollars and also your time and energy. So if nobody's coming to you through Threads, for example, then we don't want to spend any time on Threads. If you're seeing a lot of traffic from Instagram, we might want to do more on Instagram, right? We want to go where the people are coming from and lean more into that. So again, find out which platforms and marketing methods are bringing in the most customers and spend more of your time, money, and effort there. I did ask folks about growth, challenges, future focus, kind of figuring out where their head is right now. So I asked people, how would you categorize your overall business growth so far for 2025? 47% said that they are feeling steady. 22% say they're growing at a good pace. 22% say they're declining slowly. About 5% say they're declining rapidly, and another 5% say they're growing rapidly. So if you look at this on a chart, it's like a full bell curve. The ends are 5%, the next tier over is about 22% for both, and then the middle is 47%, which tells me that some folks are having a tough time, some folks are doing really well, but the majority of people are cruising along and keeping steady, which is good. I did ask the question, have you considered closing your business in the last 6 months? Again, just kind of wanted to see where folks' heads are at. 30% said yes, they have considered closing their business in the last 6 months. 70% though is feeling really good about things and they said no, they have not considered closing their business. When I asked about current struggle in business as the human behind the brand, the top three struggles were work-life balance, which included caretaking responsibilities. That was about 29%. Current events, state of the world, political arena right now was 25%. And then general feelings of burnout and mental health struggles was 16%. There's other things that were included in this, but those were the top three that we saw the most responses for. I also asked people, what is your primary focus for your business in 2025? And the top three were acquiring new customers, strengthening their marketing systems, and strengthening their sales strategies, all which are super important pieces of growing your business. One thing that I felt was missing because it was lowest rated is retaining current customers. And in my opinion, it is way easier to keep a current customer happy and keep them coming back for more than it is to acquire a new customer. I talked about this on last year's report too, but customer retention is something that I'm leaning really hard into with my mastermind clients. And I really want them to focus on relationship building, nurturing, and pouring into the existing customers. What we see with current customers is they tend to order in higher quantity, they tend to order more frequently, and their average order value is higher typically. So I like that more than I like a first-time customer, but I know there's also the grind of we need to get new customers in and keep our current customers happy. So maybe folks just ranked it lower because they have that dialed in. I'm not sure, but regardless, make sure that you're nurturing your existing customers while you also seek out new customers.